From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. After President Donald Trump declared mission accomplished in Syria in the wake of U.S. airstrikes last week, the question about the veracity of reports on the chemical attack in Douma has taken on a new urgency. Inspectors with the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons are still awaiting access to the sites of the attack to determine if the Assad regime used poison gas. Russian forces are now reportedly in the town that until just days ago was held by forces of the rebel group Jaish al-Islam. Meanwhile, reporters have been getting some access to the areas in and around Douma. Acclaimed journalist Robert Fisk reported from Douma in a piece for The Independent that has been widely read and shared. Fisk spoke with a doctor who says he did not witness the attack, but claims that the dozens of Syrian civilians who died were, quote, overcome not by gas, but by oxygen starvation in the rubbish-filled tunnels and basements in which they lived on a night of wind and heavy shelling that stirred up a dust storm. Strangely, reporters with AP and The Guardian were also in Douma, but managed to find strong corroboration of reports of chemicals being used to poison Syrians and interviewed dozens of survivors and medics. Is it possible to accept that Syria's government really did attack its civilians and still be against U.S. militarism in Syria? My guest thinks it absolutely is. Dr. Stephen Zunis is a professor of politics and international studies at the University of San Francisco, where he serves as a coordinator of the program in Middle Eastern Studies. He's also a senior policy analyst for Foreign Policy in Focus, a project of the Institute for Policy Studies, and an associate editor of Peace Review. He's been a frequent guest on our program. Welcome back to the show, Stephen.
Good to be with you.
So the last time we talked in February was around how the Syria war and the U.S. war in Syria was expanding, even though the U.S. had seemed to have achieved its objective of getting rid of ISIS. A lot of people on the left are very upset with this. It seems like they're very upset with the fact that a chemical attack might have happened because they see it as giving an excuse for the U.S. to remain in Syria. What do you make of these, let's just say, conflicting reports about the chemical attack?
Well, regardless of what happened in Douma, it has nothing to do with the presence of U.S. forces in Syria, which are hundreds of miles to the north of that area, and we're there on a totally different mission, though there is talk of mission creep, that is, that making the mission more about countering Iranian influence in Syria rather than fighting ISIS. And regardless of whether one believed that the U.S. presence in Syria to fight ISIS was legitimate or not, you got to have serious questions about the attitude that somehow the United States has the right to bring in troops to a foreign nation against that government's will in order to challenge their strategic alliances. But putting all that aside, when it comes to the more immediate issue, that is of the airstrikes, it was apparently some kind of chemical weapon attack, most likely chlorine gas. In other words, this was not probably in all likelihood a sarin, as was used in Khan Sheikhoun last year in an Al-Ghouta back in 2013. But what's interesting about this is there have been at least two dozen chlorine gas attacks documented in the course of the civil war, the vast majority by the Syrian regime, but a number of them by rebel forces as well. And why the United States, and along with Britain and France, decided that this particular attack warranted these airstrikes raises serious questions as to what might have actually motivated these Western powers to do such a thing.
So does it matter who was involved in gassing Syrians earlier last week? And what do you make of Fisk's report that there was no gas at all, that people died of a dust storm?
I mean, whenever the United States or other Western powers use an alleged atrocity by a government they don't like as an excuse for foreign intervention, a healthy degree of skepticism is warranted. But at the same time, the evidence is overwhelming that there was indeed some kind of chemical weapons attack by the regime, and know, the symptoms of the victims. I mean, this is, I've been in the Middle East during dust storms and enclosed spaces, and it's nothing like what we've seen in the videos of the aftermath of the attack a couple weeks ago. Now, it should be also be mentioned that there are credible reports that doctors have been intimidated by the Syrian regime, including having their families threatened if they shared any evidence of chemical weapons use.
Right, the Guardian newspaper's journalists were on the ground in Syria at the same time that Fisk was there and reported exactly that.
And Fisk has interviewed one doctor, and it's quite possible that he was either a regime supporter from the get-go, as are many Syrians, or that he felt intimidated in terms of threats to his family to give that kind of line to a foreign reporter. So again, I think a skepticism should not lead to conspiracy mongering and cynicism. It is quite possible to be frank about the many heinous war crimes by the Assad regime, and including this most recent atrocity, while at the same time opposing a U.S. military intervention in that country.
I mean, it feels like we should be able to do both things, accept and understand the very real suffering of Syrians and still be against U.S. militarism. But I feel like on the left, we have far too many people who want to deny the suffering of Syrians at the hands of Assad. I don't know if it's because they want to rally around Assad, they're pro-Assad, they're pro-Putin. But that becomes the basis for opposing U.S. militarism there. There was a piece by Jonathan Cook in Common Dreams entitled Robert Fisk's Duma Report Rips Away Excuses for Airstrike on Syria. But as we mentioned, Fisk interviewed one doctor who cast doubts, but all these other news organizations who have reporters on the ground that contradict Fisk's report can't all be part of some grand conspiracy that, you know, Fisk is blowing a hole in. And I feel like it ruins the credibility of the left to put things in such terms. One can say, even if Assad gassed his own civilians, what good will U.S. bombing do?
Exactly. I mean, this attack was a clear violation of the United Nations Charter and basic principles of international law, which forbid the use of military force unless you are under direct attack or it has been authorized by the United Nations Security Council. Now, even if you could then argue, well, legal niceties aside, because of the Russian veto, sometimes you do need to intervene out of a higher moral good. But again, the bombings of three sites in Syria, one of which is looking increasingly likely was a mistaken target, bringing back memories of the attack on the supposed chemical weapons factory in Sudan that ended up being a pharmaceutical plant that produced much of that country's antibiotics and vaccines. That the efficacy of it is highly questionable as well. I mean, it appears to have done nothing to limit the Syrian regime's capacity to continue its atrocities, or for that matter, its chemical weapons capability. So in many ways, it seemed like this was more of an act of catharsis, you know, out of frustration, rather than something that had any moral, legal, or strategic basis. And indeed, it could be a distraction of all three governments to their domestic critics. All three are unpopular with their public right now. And of course, with all the scandals encircling Trump, you know, some wags have referred to this as Operation Desert Stormy.
Right, there you go. Referring to Stormy Daniels and the story that hasn't gotten enough attention. So I just want to throw out that as a journalist, whenever people on the left or anybody, activists, non-activists, ordinary Americans, see any kind of wild claims that they want to be skeptical about, a really good source is Snopes.com. It's a fantastic source that is sort of the antidote to fake news. Snopes has shown, and you know, is a very trustworthy site that has shown the huge disinformation campaign that really has been shown to come from Russian sources about medics and rescue workers in Syria. There's been this huge conspiracy about the white helmets with videos and photos that purport to show them as a fake organization. Snopes has very clearly shown how these are conspiracies. So I just want to put that out there for those of our audience, because again, it ruins your it ruins our credibility, undermines our moral position to spread misinformation inadvertently or not, right?
There are many reputable sources documenting atrocities by both the Syrian regime and Syrian rebel groups. And these are the same groups. We can look at Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, which have also documented atrocities by such U.S. allies as Israel and Saudi Arabia, which, like the Syrian regime and its apologists, claim they're simply acting in self-defense against terrorists by bombing these crowded urban civilian neighborhoods. Indeed, the language you hear from apologists for the Syrian regime is practically word for word like the apologists for Israel's wars on Gaza, Saudi Arabia's ongoing war on Yemen. And of course, this also raised the question of the of how the United States is feigning its shock and horror at the killing of Syrian civilians when it's our ordnance and our support, diplomatically, militarily, and otherwise, which has made possible horrendous atrocities by allied regimes like Israel and Saudi Arabia. So, there's hypocrisy and double standards all around on this issue.
Yeah. Stephen, it seems to me that a really a good way to approach U.S. foreign policy and militarism is to have a people-centered approach. I feel like too many on the left tend to like to rally around leaders of other countries that oppose the U.S. in this sort of the enemy of my enemy is my friend type approach. And that can be betray the dignity of the actual ordinary people on the ground in whatever country we're talking about here, right? Because a Syrian being killed, whether by the Syrian government, Russian forces, or the U.S., is still a Syrian that has been killed. And if we truly care about a Syrian or a Gazan or a Yemeni being killed, we should care about it from their perspective, even as we understand and acknowledge that the U.S. is the world's superpower that never uses its militarism for good. But to have that sort of people-centered argument or moral basis seems to be a good rule of thumb rather than a leader-centered argument.
Exactly. In fact, I would argue that the real imperialists are those who deny agency to people of Syria and other governments, which may have very good reasons to rise up against the corrupt autocratic regime, even if that regime is so-called anti-imperialist. That the United States has certainly done a lot of bad things in the world, but we're not omnipotent. We cannot cause hundreds of thousands of people to rise up, either violently or nonviolently, against a hated government at the snap of our fingers, or even sending in some arms or sending in money through the National Endowment for Democracy or anything like that. And in many ways, some of the arguments of the left
or USAID,
parallel
the
line from the 1980s from the Reagan administration that the Soviets had a hit list in Central America and that the revolutions there were not about objective social conditions of the of these oppressive military regimes, but because of Moscow's meddling. And we shouldn't fall in such simplistic dichotomies.
Right. I mean, with my work on Afghanistan years ago, I noticed too many people would defend the Soviet occupation of Afghanistan, a bloody 10-year-long occupation that resulted in more than a million Afghans dead. And it was very sad to see that. Let's go back to what's actually happening in Syria, because it's such a critical issue with so many ordinary people being hurt and still no end in sight to this war that's become increasingly complicated. So the chemical weapons inspectors are in Syria, attempting, as far as you and I know right now, while we're talking, still attempting to get access to the site of the chemical weapons attack. What they find is going to be critical. Some people fear that it will trigger greater U.S. involvement. It already has, right, from the airstrikes last week. But what else could it trigger that could actually be constructive?
Well, I think whenever there's a war crime, whoever does it, it's important that the truth be known. And it is up to those of us who are concerned about the lives of the people suffering from these war crimes to make sure that it is not used to as an excuse for still greater suffering, which is what I argue the U.S. Bombing will be causing. I don't object, totally out of hand, this idea of the so-called responsibility to protect. I mean, if there's a genocide going on and some, targeted military intervention can prevent it, I'm okay with that. But, what we found in general, historically, and I really think this is the case with Syria as well, is that when there is third-party intervention, even in the case of on so-called humanitarian grounds, it actually ends up killing more people in the long run. Because the regime figures they have nothing to lose, and they'll unleash even more horror, and the rebel forces will say, we have these Western powers at our back, we don't need to negotiate, we don't need to compromise, we can keep on fighting, and it makes a negotiated settlement or an end of the fighting all the more unlikely. Indeed, it ends up prolonging the war, and that's how you get more people killed, is to needlessly prolong a war. And so, again, I see these strikes as more an act of catharsis and not one that is going to in any way contribute to ending the suffering of the Syrian people.
Right.
And I should also quickly add that those who say, the problem is we didn't bomb even more, or we didn't send in troops, or we didn't, that would be even worse, of course, because, for better or worse, the Syrian regime does have a social base, much more so than, say, Mubarak or Ben Ali or Gaddafi or some of these other dictators who've been overthrown in popular uprisings. And that, and unfortunately, though, the Syrian revolution started as a broad-based democratic, nonviolent movement. The majority of the armed groups now are hardline Islamists. They spend half their time fighting each other. And even if we overthrew the regime, it would not end the suffering of the Syrian people either. So as frustrating as it is for those of us on the outside looking at the horrors going on in Syria, there's not a whole hell of a lot we can do to make a difference.
Right. And engaging in conspiracy theorism doesn't help either. So reality-based opposition to U.S. militarism is why I like to have you on the program. Dr. Stephen Zunis, thanks as always for joining us.
My pleasure.
My guest has been Stephen Zunis, professor of politics and international studies at the University of San Francisco, where he serves as a coordinator for the program in Middle Eastern Studies. He's also a senior policy analyst for Foreign Policy in Focus. We've been discussing misinformation in the Syria war and U.S. militarism there. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.